Hey everyone, welcome to the show. What if the government could like predict your future, based on your dreams?
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
that's the kind of terrifying world we're diving into today with The Dream Hotel. It's by Leila Lamy.
Oh,
It's
cool.
a dystopian thriller that'll make you think twice about what you dream about tonight. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and you can find a link to the book in the show description.
Awesome.
So imagine a world where your dreams are like monitored, they're analyzed, for signs of potential criminal activity. Are you feeling safe or a little creeped out?
Definitely creepy. What's so unsettling about the Dream Hotel is that it taps into our deepest fears, about surveillance and control. The book doesn't just like throw you into a futuristic world. It introduces you to Sarah, a historian, and she gets caught in this system despite being innocent.
Oh, wow.
You experience the nightmare unfold through her eyes, which makes it all the more terrifying.
Okay, so Sarah's returning from London. When she's detained at LAX, they send her to a retention center called Madison, all because of her dream data. What exactly is this place, and what makes it so scary?
Well, imagine a former elementary school transformed into a high-security prison where, like, every corner is monitored by cameras and sensors. That's Madison. It's full of strict rules, a rigid schedule, and this constant fear that even a whisper could get you in trouble. Lalami does a brilliant job of describing the atmosphere, making you feel the oppressive weight of constant
And they're
surveillance.
using something called the Dream Saver implant to collect this data, right? I thought that was supposed to be for improving sleep.
Yeah, it was initially marketed as a sleep aid, but now it's mandatory, and it's used to analyze dreams for signs of criminal intent. This is where the book's real brilliance lies. It shows how easily technology designed for good can be twisted for more sinister purposes.
Right.
It makes you think about all the data we willingly give up today and what it might be used for in the future.
That's a chilling thought. And Sarah isn't alone in Madison, is she?
No, she meets other detainees, like Toya, her close friend, who starts to question the system.
Okay.
Then there's Hinton, one of the intendants. He's a really complex character, menacing at times, but also strangely sympathetic.
Interesting.
Through these characters, the book explores the different ways people cope with this oppressive environment. Some try to conform, some rebel, and some just try to hold on to their sanity.
It sounds like a pressure cooker of different personalities and reactions.
Yeah.
I'm curious, though, does the book ever explain how this dream analysis actually works? What are they looking for in these dreams?
That's one of the most fascinating aspects. They use something called the Risk Assessment Algorithm, or RAA.
Okay.
It analyzes dreams for patterns, symbols, emotions, anything that might suggest criminal intent. But the book subtly hints at the flaws in the system. Dreams are subjective, open to interpretation.
Right.
Can an algorithm really understand the nuances of the human subconscious? And who decides what constitutes a dangerous dream?
Those are some really big questions. It sounds like the book is raising some serious concerns about artificial intelligence and the potential for bias in these systems.
Absolutely. It makes you question the whole idea of pre-crime, of judging people based on what they might do, rather than what they've actually done. The Dream Hotel forces you to confront the ethical dilemmas of using technology to predict and control human behavior. It's a cautionary tale for our times.
It definitely sounds like a book that stays with you. So we've got this creepy setting, a flawed system, and a main character who is trapped in the middle of it all. What happens next? What does Sarah do?
Well, she's not just a passive victim. Sarah starts to investigate, trying to understand the RAA and how she was flagged as a risk. And in doing so, she uncovers a disturbing truth about the system's true purpose.
Ooh, this is where it gets really interesting. Tell me more. What does she find out?
Well, she discovers that a researcher named Julie Renstrom was conducting studies at Madison, testing subliminal advertising through dreams. This is one of the most chilling aspects of the book. It shows how easily our personal data, even our dreams, can be exploited for profit and control. It goes beyond government surveillance to corporate greed and the insidious ways our desires can be manipulated.
Wait, so they're not just using dream data to prevent crime, they're using it to sell stuff too. That's messed up.
Exactly. It raises some profound questions about consent and the ethics of using technology to influence our subconscious. If companies can manipulate our dreams to buy their products, what's next? It's a slippery slope. And the Dream Hotel makes you think about the potential consequences of unchecked technological advancement.
It makes you wonder, are we really in control of our choices, or are we just puppets dancing to the tune of algorithms?
That's the question the book is asking, and it doesn't offer easy answers. But by exposing these unsettling possibilities, Lalami forces us to confront these questions head-on and consider what kind of future we want to create.
It sounds like this book is a real wake-up call, pun intended. So we've got Sarah digging deeper, uncovering this whole conspiracy about dream manipulation. Where does the story go from there?
Well, just when things couldn't get any worse, a massive wildfire breaks out, forcing the evacuation of Madison. This throws everything into chaos. And Sarah finds herself in an even more precarious situation.
This sounds intense. I'm on the edge of my seat here. I have to know, what happens to Sarah? Does she manage to escape this nightmare?
You'll have to wait for part two to find out. But I can tell you this. The wildfire becomes a turning point for Sarah. It pushes her to her limits and forces her to confront the true nature of the system and her own role within it.
Ooh, that's a great cliffhanger. Well, listeners, we'll be back with part two of our deep dive into the Dream Hotel to see what happens to Sarah. In the meantime, I'm dying to know, what are your initial thoughts on this world Lalami has created? Does it feel too close to reality for comfort? Share your thoughts in the comments, and we'll see you back here soon.
Welcome back. Before the break, we left Sarah facing the chaos of a wildfire evacuation. This event really exposes the fragility of the system, you know, that she's trapped in.
Yeah, the whole idea of control, like, built into this world, suddenly seems very shaky when Mother Nature steps in. What happens to the detainees during the evacuation?
They're moved to a temporary facility, which is even more cramped and chaotic than Madison. It's during this time that Sarah starts to see the cracks in the system's facade. She witnesses the guards struggling to maintain order, the fear and desperation of the other detainees. It's a stark reminder that even in this supposedly safe and controlled environment, things can quickly spiral out of control.
It sounds like a real test of Sarah's resilience. Does this experience, like, change her outlook on the situation?
Absolutely. This is a pivotal moment in Sarah's journey. She realizes that the system isn't just flawed, it's fundamentally broken. And she starts to question her own complicity in it. She's been trying to play by the rules, hoping to be released. But now she sees that the rules are rigged against her and against everyone else in Madison.
So the wildfire becomes a catalyst for her to fight back.
Exactly. She starts to see that passive compliance isn't an option anymore. She has to take action, not just for herself, but for all the other detainees who are unjustly imprisoned.
I'm really starting to see how the Dream Hotel goes beyond a simple thriller. It's a commentary on social justice, on the dangers of blindly trusting authority, and the importance of individual action.
You're right. It's a story that resonates on so many levels. It makes you think about the systems of control that exist in our own world and the ways in which we might be complicit in them without even realizing it.
Okay, so back to Sarah. How does she start to fight back? What does she actually do?
Well, it starts with small acts of defiance. She refuses to participate in certain activities, challenges the guards, and tries to rally the other detainees. But her most significant act of rebellion is joining a work strike.
A work strike? Tell me more about that. What kind of work were the detainees forced to do?
It's not physical labor, but mental labor. They're required to participate in these dream therapy sessions, where they have to analyze and dissect their dreams, basically giving the system even more data to use against them.
That's so devious. They're using the detainees' own minds to further entrap them.
Exactly. And by refusing to participate in these sessions, Sarah is taking a stand against the system's attempt to control her thoughts and emotions. She's reclaiming her own mental space, even within the confines of Madison.
It's a powerful statement. But I imagine a work strike in a place like Madison is pretty risky. How do the authorities react?
They crack down, of course. They increase surveillance, restrict privileges, and even threaten solitary confinement. But despite the risks, Sarah's actions inspire others. More and more detainees join the strike, creating a sense of solidarity and resistance that the authorities struggle to contain.
It sounds like a real David versus Goliath situation. Does this uprising have any real impact? Does it actually change anything?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. The work strike becomes a symbol of defiance, a crack in this seemingly impenetrable facade of the system. And it creates this tension, this sense of unease that permeates throughout Madison. But the true impact of the strike is revealed later in the story, in ways that I don't want to spoil.
Ooh, yeah? Another cliffhanger. You're killing me with these. But it sounds like Sarah's actions have consequences that go beyond the immediate situation. That's like that ripple effect, where even a small act of resistance can have far-reaching implications.
You're absolutely right. And that's one of the most powerful messages of the Dream Hotel. It shows that even in a seemingly hopeless situation, individual actions can make a difference. It's about standing up for what you believe in, even when it's risky, even when it seems like you're fighting a losing battle.
It's a message we could all use a reminder of now and then. So we've got Sarah sparking this wave of resistance within Madison. What about the outside world? Does anyone know what's going on inside these retention centers? Is there any kind of opposition to the Crime Prevention Act?
That's a great question, and one that the book explores in subtle ways. We learn that there are whispers of dissent, rumors of a resistance movement operating outside the system, but it's all very clandestine, very underground. The government has been very effective at controlling the narrative, convincing the public that the Crime Prevention Act is necessary for their safety.
It's like a classic propaganda tactic. Create fear, offer a solution, and then silence any dissenting voices.
Exactly. And the book does a chillingly realistic job of depicting how easily people can be manipulated, especially when it comes to their safety and security. It makes you question the information you're fed, the narratives you're told to believe.
It's a reminder to always think critically and question authority, no matter how convincing they might seem. Okay, so we've got this undercurrent of resistance brewing both inside and outside of Madison. What happens next? Does Sarah manage to connect with this outside movement? Does she finally escape from this nightmare?
You'll have to stay tuned for part 3 to find out, but I can tell you this. The story takes some unexpected twists and turns, and Sarah's journey becomes even more complex and challenging than you might imagine.
Well, listeners, I don't know about you, but I'm hooked. We'll be back with part 3 of our deep dive to uncover the final chapters of Sarah's story. In the meantime, I'm curious what has stood out to you the most about the Dream Hotel so far. What are your thoughts on the ethical dilemmas the book raises? Share your insights in the comments, and we'll see you back here soon for the thrilling conclusion.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Last time we left Sarah caught in a web of rebellion and uncertainty. The work strike is shaking things up, but she's still trapped, you know, within this system that preys on people's dreams.
Yeah, the tension really ramps up in this final part of the book. The work strike has exposed the cracks in the system, and now both the authorities and the detainees are on edge. It's like a powder keg waiting to explode.
So what happens? Does the strike succeed? Does Sarah manage to escape? Well, I don't want to give away too much, but let's just say that the situation doesn't resolve in a neat and tidy way. There are unexpected twists and turns, betrayals, and moments of intense danger. Sarah's journey becomes even more complex as she grapples with the consequences of her actions.
It sounds like things get pretty intense. I'm guessing there are some moral dilemmas too. Sarah has to make some tough choices.
Absolutely. One of the things I love about the Dream Hotel is that it doesn't offer easy answers. Sarah is constantly forced to question her own beliefs, her loyalties, and the very nature of right and wrong. The lines between good and evil become blurred, and she has to make decisions that have profound consequences, not just for herself, but for others as well.
That's what makes dystopian fiction so compelling, right?
Right.
It forces us to confront these ethical gray areas, these situations where there's no clear-cut right answer.
Exactly. And the Dream Hotel does this brilliantly. It doesn't preach or offer simplistic solutions. It presents a complex and nuanced world that reflects the complexities of our own reality. It makes you think, what would I do in that situation? Could I stand up for what I believe in, even if it meant risking everything?
Those are the kinds of questions that stay with you long after you finish the book. So tell me, without giving away any major spoilers, what happens to Sarah? Does she find any kind of resolution? Does she ever get out of Madison?
Well, I can tell you that Sarah's story doesn't end with a triumphant escape or a clear-cut victory. Her journey is more about self-discovery and coming to terms with the reality of the world she's living in.
That sounds like a very realistic and perhaps even more impactful ending. It's not always about a happy ending, but about growth and understanding.
Precisely. And the Dream Hotel leaves you with the sense of lingering unease, a recognition that even if Sarah finds a measure of peace, the system that imprisoned her still exists. The fight for freedom is ongoing, and there are no guarantees.
It's a reminder that the battle for our rights, for our privacy, for control over our own minds, is a battle we have to fight every day, even in the seemingly safe confines of our own reality. So even though the Dream Hotel is a work of fiction, it holds up a mirror to our own world, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so powerful and relevant. It's a cautionary tale about the dangers of complacency, of blindly trusting authority, of surrendering our freedoms in the name of security. It's a call to action, urging us to be vigilant, to question the narratives we're told, and to fight for a future where our dreams, our thoughts, our very minds remain our own.
That's a powerful message to end on. Well, listeners, we've reached the end of our deep dive into Leila Lamy's The Dream Hotel. We've explored the book's chillingly realistic world, the ethical dilemmas it raises, and the enduring power of resistance If you haven't read the book yet, I highly recommend checking it out. You can find a link in the show description. And if you've already read it, I'd love to hear your thoughts. What moments resonated with you the most? What questions did the book leave you pondering? Share your insights in the comments below. And as always, don't forget to like and subscribe for more deep dives into the books and ideas that matter. Until next time, keep those minds sharp and those dreams free.